The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Right, I think we cook him with gas now.
Good, you can hear me now.
Try again?
Yep. You can hear me now.
Yes. It sounds like a Verizon ad boy.
Okay.
So welcome. So nice to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you started this journey as, you know, a woman in politics, woman leading in politics.
Okay, so I'd actually say that I'm just started my journey in politics, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. Currently, I'm an attorney at law. I attended the University of the West Indies. Funny enough, I actually graduated as the valedictorian of my class, even though I often forget it. Mm-hmm. After completing that, I went on to the Hugh Whiting Law School, where I obtained my legal education certificate. And of course, I was called to the Bar of Trinidad and Tobago in 2019. But actually, the most important and my favorite thing about me is that I'm very much a country girl. Mm-hmm. I am from the constituency of Miaro, particularly the area of Rio Claro, where I grew up, where I attended both primary and secondary school, and where I often go back to visit even to today.
All right, so what about law attracted you to say, yes, I want to be in front of, I would say, a little intimidating, judges and magistrates?
Yeah.
What was the appeal?
So the appeal for me, I struggled, not necessarily struggled, but I had the passion for both law. Not because parents told me to do law. I know that's usually the case. I always wanted to be an attorney, but I also always wanted to be a social worker. But I recognized that I would be able to drive more change, be able to, you know, debate laws, be able to scrutinize laws from a legal perspective and do way more as an attorney as opposed to a social worker. Mm-hmm. So that's why I essentially went into the role and decided to pursue the pathway of being an attorney at law.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the social working side of your experience, your journey. Uh-huh. Is it that the pressure for social workers was too much that you decided, I think I would be better suited to or more effective? Uh-huh. Tell us a little bit how you see needs.
So the switch actually occurred in secondary school, and it wasn't because of any hands-on training as a social worker, so I should put that to the forefront from the beginning. But I kind of just recognize that they don't necessarily have the resources to do exactly what they want to do. So I recognize that I would essentially just be frustrated in the role. So I prefer to be in a position where I kind of drive any policy and probably drive in change to ensure that the social workers in the future might be able to have the resources that they need to function effectively. Mm-hmm. Because I could also remember at one point, to go through secondary school, my mother worked 3 jobs. And at one point, she applied for a food guard. And I saw the process firsthand of how they come into your home and they scrutinize everything to see, you know. And I said to myself, I want to be able to be in a position to, you know, review these things and to ensure that, you know, the people that you're helping, they're not necessarily demeaning them at the same time.
At the same time, yeah.
Yeah. So that was the reason that I made that switch.
Because that has been a common experience with many people who decide to make use of the social services that are available.
Yeah.
However, some of them tend not to want to do that because of what you just described.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I could remember being a child, and it isn't because, you know, we grew up dirt poor or anything like that. It's just that my mom lost her job at the point in time. Mm-hmm. So, like, to see it happen firsthand, it was kind of like a shock, like, oh, it's kind of, you know. So that's why I decided, you know, probably not social work, even though I would, because I am involved in a lot of different groups where I do a lot of outreach and I do a lot of community work. Mm-hmm. But I think that being an attorney would have placed me in the best position to do what we set out to do.
In terms of policy making now, the role of women in policy making, how has that changed over the years, and what do you see yourself doing in creating that change?
Right, so I think in Trinidad and Tobago, to be quite honest, we have made significant headway by seeing women in these key positions. So, for instance, we had a female prime minister, we had a female president, yes, we had our first female attorney general. So we have seen women in these positions. So it's really and truly just a matter of ensuring that these women, when they are at the table, that their voice are actually heard. Because I did a course recently. It was done by the Sewell group, and it was for women electoral candidates. And one of the things they discussed was the fact that sometimes when women are entering politics, they're usually placed into the, I don't necessarily want to call some ministries lesser than the other ministries, but they are usually placed in the gender and child affairs ministry. And because of that, sometimes they recognize that women don't necessarily get the financial backing to run their political campaigns. So while we are seeing that women are getting a place at the table, just as the young people, we are seeing that young people are getting a place at the table, I think now we need to also recognize that their voices are heard when they are at the table and they are given meaningful roles as well.
And meaningful roles to the execution part. And this is another angle of it. How can women who are in that mindset of saying, I see what the ground needs, I have an idea of what the policy should look like, how do I get to the actionable stage? How has you know, that transition been? How, what is your observation so far?
So I think now that we live in a digital age, persons can utilize their social media platforms to actually drive change, in my opinion. Because there is a space for raising awareness, but we also need to go far beyond that and actually start when we, so for instance, currently we're in the general election season, and we're going to elect persons to represent us in parliament. Not just using your social media to raise awareness about the issues, but also to ensure that the persons, men or women who you place at the table, they are best equipped to represent us when they enter the chambers of our parliament. Because our members of parliament have, in my opinion, three key functions. The first would be to debate laws. The second would be like an oversight. And the third would essentially be to represent the members of their constituency. So it's essentially just ensuring that you raise awareness of the issues. And when women enter these positions, and even if we select them, that they are able and they are best equipped to make the changes that we actually want to see, and that they represent the needs of the person who placed them there in the first place.
In the first place, Now, the ticklish part of the discussion has always been the relationship between strong men within the political arena and women who are just as strong vocally and, you know, in terms of policy making and voice. How do you find that balance? How do you navigate through that?
Yeah, so I could only speak from my perspective. So even within the workplace, you recognize how sometimes you have to implement some strategies to ensure that your voice is heard. Sometimes you have to make it feel as though the man is making this particular decision so that they would actually
they come up with the idea.
Exactly. So I feel as though, and then sometimes when women speak up too much, then we're often branded as being too emotional, and the little stereotypes that they have on women is automatically placed. So I think it's definitely a balance that you have to implore to ensure that your voices are still heard when you're at the table, and to ensure that they take you seriously. Sometimes you have to make noise. Sometimes you have no choice but to make noise when you're there, even though they call you emotional, and even though they might label you negatively, to ensure that your voice is actually heard.
All right, we're going to take some calls right after this break here at Freedom 106.5 FM. If you would like to speak with Miss West and, you know, ask questions, you are free to do that. 627-3223, 625-2257, and of course 306-1065. We'll be right back.
Trying to reduce our TNTech bill and you still opening the fridge door looking for you don't know what and wasting electricity. It's easier to save than to waste, you know?
I don't know about that logic, no? Save like how?
Like thinking about what you want in the fridge before opening it, using cool water instead of hot water unless absolutely necessary, opening the window for fresh air instead of running AC all the time.
With all these savings, I could well negotiate a little raise in my allowance.
Solar power to the people.
A project of the European Union funded global climate Climate Change Alliance, United Nations Development Programme, and the Ministry of Planning and Development.
Castrokill is a selective post-emergent grass control for straight-leaf grasses in broadleaf crops. Castrokill is systemic and causes no harm to vegetable crops. Castrokill can be used on crops such as lettuce, cabbage, watermelons, peppers, rice, etc. Castrokill works in 2 to 3 days after application. By inhibiting growth of the grass, Castrokill will suppress knot grass and requires no sticker penetration nor any pH adjuster. Castrokill is exclusively distributed by CAS Agriculture Supplies Limited and is available at all leading agro shops. Telephone 673-6802 or 354-5813.
Welcome once again, TNT. We're inside the Human Impact on Freedom 106.5 FM. And if you're just joining us, we have Miss Andisa West. Sorry.
Yes, West.
Yes. So how are you going to name Andisa?
Oh, my goodness.
Who gave you that name?
So like all Caribbean people, my dad's name is Andy. And my parents were, of course, in love at the time, mm-hmm. and they named me Andisa. If I go into my middle names, you'll see how much in love they were with the Andy going down the line. Uh-oh. So that's how I got my name, Andisa.
So good morning to parents as well. Great job. So there's another perspective of your journey, the influence of your parents and support of your parents. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, my parents... I don't know what I would do without my parents, especially my mom. Mm-hmm. My parents split, but I think that my dad still tried as best as he could to mm-hmm. play an active part in my life. But as I said before, I did CSEC. I mm-hmm. got all ones. And you know, you're thinking you're going to get the scholarship to go into university. But I didn't get the grades. Well, I got two. So I didn't get the grades that I needed to get a scholarship.
Yeah.
So at that point, I was like, how exactly am I going to fund my university journey? And I went home and I told my mom that I got into UWE. Mm-hmm. And she was like, we'll figure it out. And at the point in time, as I said before, she had just lost her job. So she was working actually as a security officer at a school. Mm-hmm. And she went back and she took up 3 extra jobs. So she worked as a security, she worked driving the ambulance, and then she also worked in Guayaquil. And these are in 3 different locations. So she would leave from Rio Claro, then go to Guayaquil, and then come back to San Fernando in order for me to have the money to go to university. So I cannot even begin to explain how blessed I am to have the parents that I have, mm-hmm. and how I wouldn't have been able to be where I am today without them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And on the other side of it, as we were just quickly discussing off air, the perspective of women trying to carry on their careers and have to deal with things at home.
Yes.
Domestic violence, the idea of not having money, trying to figure out how to, you know, make bills and make ends meet. From the perspective of an advocate, what are some of the things we really need to pay attention to? In terms of policy, for mm-hmm. those things to, we can't say completely alleviate because that would be a utopian
stretch,
dream.
Yeah.
But to at least protect the ones who do come forward.
Yeah. So, you raise 2 important things, I think, which would be care work. So, women, even though we are seeing that there are more women in the workplace and they are taking up key positions, we are generally still responsible for care work. Mm-hmm. And I have seen firsthand how women who have children, how difficult it is to balance the two. Mm-hmm. At some point in time, one would be placed on the back burner, and mm-hmm. both things are very important. Your work is important because you need to have a steady income, and your children is also important. So we also need to figure out whether it be implementing flexible work hours for women so that they would be able to have the time to drop their children off mm-hmm. to work mm-hmm. or work from home. So we definitely need to revisit that. And the second thing that you also raised would be domestic violence. I actually want to let you know that recently there was the Tut Lamkin decision. In that particular case, there was a young woman. She was in a relationship with a man. They had a child together. She made an application for a protection order mm-hmm. at the court. When she went, the master thought that she was only bringing that particular application in order to speed up her application for maintenance that she had against the man as well, simultaneously. So they threw it out. She made a next protection order. She didn't appear at the date of the hearing. The judge listened to the man,
the other party,
and said that they have worked it out. She's no longer willing to pursue it, and they threw it out. So she made several other protection orders and other reports to the police station. Actually, the day before she was killed, she made a report to the police station. At the same time, he also made a report. So they were both reporting each other. So you understand how messy these domestic violence situations are. She was subsequently killed, and the person who her abuser also killed himself. The judge ruled that the state has a positive obligation to protect these persons. So they recognize that the fact that they didn't do all that they could in order to protect this woman meant that they breached her rights as guaranteed in the Constitution. So to me, that particular decision was very instrumental and was very forward thinking, especially as it relates to domestic violence. And the Attorney General at the time, Senior Counselor Reginald Armour, he decided not to appeal the decision, accepting that the state has the responsibility to take steps to protect persons who are in these positions. So I definitely wanted to highlight that particular decision. And also, I went to a conversation with the, because Tut Lamkin is the young woman's mother. So I went to a conversation where she was there, and to me, it was chills when she said that the day the police officers came to her house to let her know that her daughter was killed, she was also being abused in her household. So it was only after that that she made the decision to leave. So not only, so you see that there's a cycle of domestic violence. So her mother was being abused and she was also being abused. Unfortunately, she lost her life, but at least out of that very unfortunate situation, we now have the Tut Lamkin decision, where the court has said that the state has an obligation to take positive actions to protect persons who are in these situations.
And to further investigate. And that would extend to making officers or first responders more aware or more equipped to deal with these situations when they reach on site.
Yes, because sometimes you go to the police station and you report that you are probably experiencing domestic violence, and they think that that's man and wife business, woman sort out your business, as we say in local parlance. And worse yet, if it's a man who goes to report that he is being abused, we sometimes don't take him seriously.
We've heard stories of them laughing and then turning them away. All right, let's take some calls. With, I'm sure they will have some questions. 625-2257, 627-3223, and of course, 3061-065, the WhatsApp number. Hello, good morning, welcome.
Hi, good morning, Dustin.
Good morning.
To your guest.
Good morning.
Interesting discussion on this domestic violence thing. Could you give, just for my benefit, what's the case that you would have referred to?
Tut Lamkin. So it's Tut Lamkin. It can be accessed on the internet, so you could just search it up or go on the Trinidad and Tobago's judiciary website and you would be able to see the full decision.
All right, thanks very much.
No problem.
I'm listening to it, and when you refer to that case, the first thing comes to my mind is that as protective officers in the country, in this country, police service, they are vested with the responsibility to protect and serve the public. And we have had several cases, so much cases now. It's untenable that these ladies who are abused at the hands of their significant other goes to the police, make several reports. And what does the law say in relation to abuse, domestic violence in this country, that the person is still allowed to walk free? Because let's face it, a restraining order has not been proven to be effective in protecting women against domestic violence in this country, right? We have seen a person restraining order, and in the face of a restraining order, they could not have restrained nobody because they end up getting killed. So what provision in the law that is there that the police can go after these perpetrators and ensure that they are safely kept away from commissioning this offense any further? And secondly, how can they be rehabilitated to become more productive citizens in the country? Because they even being in prison is even good with their children.
Yeah.
So, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a holistic thing you need to pay attention to.
Yes. But and to be honest, Trinidad and Tobago have made significant steps as it relates to domestic violence. So there was actually the Domestic Violence Amendment Act, where they tried to place harsher penalties and systems in place to protect women. So not only is the woman allowed to make a report against an abuser, if you are witnessing it, you can also make the report. If you're a teacher and a child comes and you realize that the child is probably in a home that has domestic violence, you can also make the report. So there is the Domestic Violence Amendment Act that tries to provide further protection for persons who may be experiencing domestic violence. And as I said, now with the Todd Lampkin decision, previously, I don't think that we realize how important that particular decision
is. Yeah.
Because previously we recognized our rights as saying that the state has a negative obligation, so they can't violate this, they can't do this. But now they are saying that the state has to do something, placing an obligation for them to act. So if you go to the police station and you make a report and they don't take you seriously, you could possibly rely on that decision to take action against the police officers who failed to act in that particular situation. So I think that there is some protection for persons who may be in those positions. And then the rehabilitation point of it, we have to give some kudos to the Gender and Child Affairs Division of the Office of the Prime Minister, because they have been doing significant work to try to change the social norms that we have in our society, to at least change the way persons see things and change the gender norms that we accept. But obviously, there's still a lot more work to be done,
to
and
be
we recognize
done.
That, yes.
And the role of women in politics has a very influential part to play in at least moving from groundwork to policy to enforcement.
Yeah.
Talking about the other things that, in terms of women in politics, we see a lot of strong women coming to the fore. CNC3 is really giving another view of political women coming forward.
Yeah.
You know, and embracing the environment that is politics. Would you be interested in stepping into that realm? Because you've gone from the idea of social work into getting your law degree. Would you see yourself stepping onto a platform?
To be quite honest, I always tell people that I want to be an attorney at law and an attorney at law alone. I don't know if I want to get into politics, even though I am very attracted to it. And that is probably because of the state of our politics. I don't know if I'm willing to be dragged through the coals, the way how our political system is. And you know, as a woman in politics, you often face some of the criticisms that men don't face.
Yeah.
You're not being criticized for your hairstyles and if your nails matching your, you know, I'm not saying that men don't also face criticism for how they dress as well, but sometimes I recognize as a young person looking into the political arena that the woman often face very harsh criticism in that space. Even when the Honorable Kamala Prasad Bisesa was the Prime Minister, I don't know if you could remember that it was a big fiasco that she wore yellow sneakers at an event. And to me, that's so strange.
It's so, like the smallest of issues that you can attract.
You could bring how much to the table, how much benefit to the table, but then they often go straight down to very minor things and try to criticize you for it. So I don't know if I'm attracted or if I'm willing to put myself in that political arena for that reason.
And then there are strong role models in the political arena as well that have been sidelined.
Yes.
And for positions that they are, you would think, or from their track record, you can see would have handled, at least got more work done if they were allowed to free rein to do what they had to do.
And I don't necessarily want to make it too political because I don't think I'm a diehard PNM or UNC.
No, this is in general.
Right.
Yeah.
But I also recognize that Anita Haynes was not selected to be the Member of Parliament for Tabikita again after speaking out. And to me, she was one of the persons who I looked up to in politics. I recently did another training course. It was the Yes Leadership program with the women parliamentarians, and she was one of the persons who was instrumental in that program. She actually came for one of the sessions to speak to all the participants, mm-hmm. and I recognize how much benefit she brought to the table. So to me, at least, it was kind of disappointing to see that she was not selected again to represent her constituents in Tawakit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the willingness for women to get into these arenas, I honestly think that they start off with the intention of being persons who can affect change.
Yeah.
Positive change. It didn't matter what side of the coin
yes.
they appeared on, and their voices seem to be held back a little bit.
Yeah. But to be honest, sometimes when you get into it, then you realize how difficult it is to make change within the system.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, well, I probably wouldn't say what ministry it is, but we're currently trying to make change in a particular ministry, and you realize how difficult it is,
mm-hmm.
how difficult it is to change the culture of the workers, how difficult it is to even say to do simple things. So you might have all, as I said, that's probably another reason why I don't want to get into politics. You mm-hmm. might have all the intention to do how good, and then when you enter, you realize that you're often facing so much barriers that is stopping you from making the change that you want to make.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only when you're within the system, you see how difficult it can be to actually get things done.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, things can still get done, and that shouldn't deter other persons from doing so.
Yeah. Now, this is a couple minutes to 10 o'clock of the conversation going so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I know if I could probably ask my producer if you could stay a little 10, 15 minutes. But one of the things that I wanted to discuss as well, we just mentioned being in the political system has its challenges.
Yes.
If it is that you decided to effect that change outside of that system,
mm-hmm.
what would you suggest for women to effect that change?
So definitely civil society, starting your non-profit organization, your non-governmental organizations, and you doing the work that you want to do. So the same way the caller was talking about rehabilitating men.
Mm-hmm.
So you could probably focus on that particular area. But as an attorney at law, I was recently reading an article where the person who is also an attorney
mm-hmm.
said that he's willing to use the courts to drive the change that he wants, to challenge the pieces of legislation that may not be well, or to challenge the policies that isn't working for our benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely using your profession. So for me, that would be being an attorney at law, to challenge pieces of legislation, to take up cases for women who probably went to a police station and they didn't get the recourse that they wanted, to now go before the courts and say, hey, we have this woman, and she went, so that they could actually start taking us seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially just doing what you can in whatever role that you are, but you can also connect and network with different persons to be able to drive even more change.
Mm-hmm.
Because we live in this society, we know exactly what the problems are. So we are the best persons to be able to start making those types of change.
Yeah, because we are the ones who are at the forefront of the homes, in the nurturing side
yes.
of it, and seeing where the deficiencies are.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the homes is where we need to do a lot of work, to be quite honest. I came from a single parent family, so I'm not saying that single parent families are destined to fail,
mm-hmm.
But the home needs to do a lot
more.
Especially when you go into the schools and you talk to these students, you realize that a lot of children just need some guidance. And we're not just placing all the blame on the parents. Every single institution has a part to play. So if you recognize that at home this person isn't getting the necessary guidance, it is now up for the teachers and the school as an institution to step in
mm-hmm.
and to do the work as well. Yeah.
All right. Well, any final comments, shout out you want to do before stepping into final comments?
My final comments would essentially be that we live in a really blessed nation.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a nation where we have GATE, we have free education. So it's really just up to us to take advantage of all the opportunities that we have and to speak out when we see things. Too mm-hmm. often we hear stories, or for instance, when someone comes and they're explaining to me the domestic violence situation that they are in, you realize how much persons probably know, but we just turn a blind eye and we leave it because
mm-hmm.
that's not my business. So take advantage of all the opportunities that we have and start making change from wherever you are. Even though you think that your little role may not be as meaningful in the grander scheme,
mm-hmm.
everything will all come together and we will make this country even better than it currently is. So that's my final comments for today.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I enjoyed the conversation. So for anyone who is listening to Miss West right now, I would like to get in contact with you. because they believe that your legal services can, you know, help their situation.
You could probably follow me on social media. I'm on Instagram and Facebook with my name, Andisa. Andisa West, as well as on LinkedIn, and we could connect and have different conversation and even, you know, do programs. As I said, I'm a proud country girl, so definitely programs focused on rural areas like the constituency of Miaro. Yeah.
All right, TNT, so you heard the budding lawyer. You can look her up on Instagram and, of course, get in contact with her. All right, TNT, thank you so much.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.